that the evidence you give is truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
If you'd state your name for the record.
Maxine Jones.
Whose exhibit was it? I think it was yours on the... if you would just go through and identify the exhibit, and then I'd like you to describe the methodology for it. So if we have exhibit number one... I'm going to use the one we've got.
You want to do the start, and then also...
All I want you to do is identify the report and the appendix as the product of the team. If you'd explain for us how you all came to be, I think that we pretty much know it because we've been here for a long time, but if you would explain how your team was put together and that this, identify this for me as the report and the appendix of the team. So.
Okay, a historian from Florida State University, from Florida.
Would you also, excuse me, Dr. Jones, identify who else is at the table with you?
Okay, the investigative team consists of Professor Larry Rivers from Florida A&M, a graduate student Tom Dye from Florida State, and Professor Rogers, also from Florida State University. One of our team members, Dr. David Colburn, cannot be with us today, but he's at the University of Florida.
Okay.
We jointly submitted a proposal to the Board of Regents, that proposal to study the incident which occurred at Rosewood, Florida, in January of 1923, and we were awarded that proposal in late August, I believe, 1993. We came up with the research design that we submitted to, I think, someone from the House Judiciary Office, along with members of the Board of Regents, or at least members from the staff of the Board of Regents.
For the record, the Speaker's Office, the General Counsel, Ross McSwain. Was reviewing. He had put together the bid proposals on this project, and that your contact.
In Rosewood in 1923. And so we did a historical study of the county, which included Rosewood and Cedar Key and Sumner. We tried to give a chronological accounting of the events that took place that first week in January of 1923. We provided an accounting, which was documented. We used newspapers, both black and white, north and south. We conducted many oral interviews with both black and whites who were from the area, and others who had some direct knowledge of the tragedy. We used depositions. We had hoped to conduct a field inspection, but we did not get permission to go into the property. We had hoped to use some archaeologists from FSU as well as from the University of Florida, but we did not have permission to do that. We used county and state records that were available. We used tax records and deed records. We searched for sheriff and police files, and we looked for grand jury records. Unfortunately, we were not able to locate grand jury records. Neither were we able to locate sheriff and police files. We tried to identify the victims, including those killed and wounded, and to the degree possible of the value of their property and the extent of their loss. We were able to document who owned property in some cases. There was talk of a mass grave. We didn't find any documentation of it, and since we weren't allowed to go into the property, there really wasn't much that we could do. We compiled our work And you have the documented history along with the appendices.
Would you identify and now represent to us, is the report and final report of the
committee?
And attached to it is the appendix.
It is the appendix.
That supports the various factual statements that you put together in the report.
Yes.
Okay, I can have that back unless you need it. Right. Okay. And finally, for the record, to the best of the team's knowledge, this research and report was conducted in compliance with the procedures that professional historians would do in preparing reports. Okay. Who has questions of the team now? Is everyone going to testify? Because I'm going to ask the other two team members then to raise their hands for me. Do you solemnly swear that the evidence you will give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
God,
thank you. Okay. Do people have questions?
I have many.
Okay. This is Mr. Peters from the Attorney General's office.
One, the most important one. Were you surprised by the witness testimony that the picture of the burning cabin in your report isn't a rosewood cabin?
We, as far as we knew, this is from the New York Literary Digest, and it was identified, the caption, as being from that, and it was contemporary with the event. And yes, we assumed that that was an authentic picture.
In fact, when I met with you the other week, we talked about that, and you know, folks thought that was something that just got that picture taken, that's funny. Not true.
And there's some other pictures, too.
Is this the Literary Digest 1923 or 1993?
It
should be 23. Organization-wise, generally, how were the tasks delegated among the team members? Who was responsible for governor's records, who was responsible for attorney records, however you delegated? How was that done?
Dr. Rogers and Tom Dye combed a county record. I think all of us spent some time going through the governance records. I know I've gone through them. Dr. Rogers has gone through them. I think Tom has gone through them also. Myself and Dr. Colburn tried very hard to locate the grand jury records. We all went through newspapers. I spent a good deal of time going through the NAACP records as well. As state and local community leaders across the state.
It sort of dovetailed. We worked,
yeah.
Some of us working together on one project, say newspapers, or Professor Rivers, who went to Tuskegee to do the archives there. It was by subject matter, but it just sort of sometimes worked out that one or two of us would be able to work together. We worked together and worked singly, and it was. Very compatible, happy arrangement.
Where specifically did you look for records of the governor, or records of the sheriff's office, whoever did that? Where did you go?
We all did that, I think, in the archives. But it's unfortunate between 1909 and 1925, there's just a dearth of materials. The governor before Hardy, who was the governor in 23, was Sidney J. Katz. And the only records they had with Sidney J. Katz are a couple of his inauguration speech and a couple of addresses to the legislature. That's it.
Dr. Rogers, would you and the other team members turn your mics on to make sure that we're picking you all up?
Thank you. And then under Hardy, there's practically nothing. There is a scrapbook. And the scrapbook, I went through it carefully, and for 1923, there's nothing relating to Rosewood. And then John Martin, the governor after him, there's nothing there either. In fact, you don't pick up a good record of governor's correspondence and papers until Doyle Carlton's administration, when he comes in 1929. So that was it was just a bitter disappointment to us that we could not get that. And one explanation for that is that Florida did not have an archives and history separate department until the 1960s. And so much, so many records were just lost or destroyed or people like Chapel Hill, they came down and got all our records, and that's part of the explanation. That we were really disappointed that we couldn't get, that there were no more papers.
I might want to add that I also did a search of the National Archives in Washington, D.C. for Governor Hardy's paper, and I also searched the P.K. Young Florida History Collection at the, in Gainesville.
Similar question in regard to the records of the state attorney's office. Dakotis, is that how you pronounce his name?
Dakotis.
Where did you look for those records and with what result?
Same place. I checked the state attorney's records here at the archives. Nothing. I think the state attorney at the time was Buford Rivers.
Yeah.
Rivers Buford, I
Rivers,
think. I think.
Buford.
There are no records. At all.
I'm thinking now in terms of the state attorney and not the attorney general.
Right, but we assume that there might be some records relating to Rosewood.
The attorney general.
Right, but there was nothing there.
Right. Say we also
state attorney couldn't get those in.
We checked the state attorney's regional office there in Levy County,
yes,
Alachua County,
yeah,
and also we also checked the Supreme Court records here in town.
Nothing. The reference is made to the grand jury report in your report. That's derived from the news clippings at the time. Similar question with reference to the offices of the Levy Sheriff and the Alachua Sheriff. Did you find any records in either of those?
Sheriff's offices were the cupboard was narrower there than almost anywhere. Mm-hmm. Sheriff records also difficult to get, and we could not get any for 1923.
With reference to the state militia?
Okay, the state militia had become the National Guard by national law in 1905.
Yes.
And wasn't much, the state militia or the National Guard in Florida, down to around 1920. But in 1923, they really began a modern National Guard and had about 1,000 members
statewide.
And in 1922, the State Guard had been called out to prevent lynching of a prisoner in a Duval County jail. But in 1923, there was no action. In fact, I brought along, and I'd like to give this to you, a statement from the report of the 1923 Advocate General. And got my glasses on. Maxine, read that. That's the statement.
Under active service, it says the troops of this state have performed no active service during the year in the aid of civil authorities, and that's for the year 1923.
With reference to them being called out, you say in 1922. How do we know of that?
It's it's a man named David Hawk. Yes, who wrote a book called Florida's Army and came out in 1986.
Yes.
And it's a good book. And reviewing it, given the history of the militia and National Guard, he discusses the year 1922 when they did call out the National Guard.
Do we have access to records indicating on what occasions the National Guard was called out for 24 or 25.
Yes. What you would do is just go to the annual report of the Adjutant General, and they list all the activities.
Did you, in fact, do that?
For 1924?
Yes.
No.
25?
Well, I've done it before in previous research in the 1930s. They were called out at Mariana, and they have been called out several times.
Okay. But in terms of attachments to your report or a record you can produce today, you said the material's there, it's just not in the record of this report.
Well, we checked for 1923.
Yeah, we checked for 23, and I brought that, but I could have easily brought all of them.
Do you recall for 24 when they were called out?
I don't know. I didn't check 24.
25?
I didn't check 25.
26?
No, just the general reading.
All right. I think you've answered my question, but with regard to records of the
let me get this straight. In 22... there was one incident in which the National Guard was called out, and that related to a lynching.
Right. That related to an attempted, the fear of an attempted lynching at the Duval County Jail.
In Duval
County. And they prevented the lynching.
And the records of the Adjutant General reflect only that incident as a civil
right.
incident.
Right, and that was 22.
22.
Yes.
And what you've given, and which I now will accept, Mr. Peter, is the record that shows in 1923 there's no report of any activity of the National Guard with regard to civil unrest.
Yes, sir.
Similar question, I guess the answer with regard to the grand jury investigation. You made the inquiry of the attorney's office and were able to find that.
Larry, why don't you talk about that?
The grand jury?
Yeah.
Well, we called the state attorney's office. We went to Bronson and other areas, and we did not find anything except what was mentioned in the newspaper reports.
We also went to the Lateral County Courthouse and had no luck. There was a fire there in August 13 or 14 years ago, and so there's a possibility that the records were destroyed. We also tried to contact some relatives of Long, and we made contact with the son and daughter, but he had no papers or...
He was a judge.
Right. But there are no papers.
They may exist, but we just cannot find them and haven't been able to find them.
At the time, it's just hard to do that. Can't put the air back in the balloon. All right, in terms, I understand the inquiry for the official records. What follow-up, if any, did you do for the officials involved? And I'll start with the obvious question. I know the answer, but let me ask you for the record. You did not inquire with Governor Hardee because he was deceased. You did not inquire with the state attorney because he was deceased. You did not inquire with the Levy Sheriff because he is deceased. You did not inquire with the Alachua Sheriff because he is deceased. Is that accurate?
That's right.
You did not inquire with the governor's professor. I'm sorry, what is his name?
Edward.
Because he is deceased.
Well, we're assuming.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
Did
we
you look?
Of course we looked.
Okay. Oh, we really looked. But there was no, we looked at Tallahassee telephone book.
There's
no record
on it. Records at FSU? We checked the catalog and all at FSU.
No record.
Next level of inquiry, what, if any, did you make of relatives or spouses of, and I'll begin with the governor. Did you speak with his wife, his widow, his grandchildren, or recollections or records?
No.
Did you consider doing that?
Well, we just really didn't. I mean, it would have been no forever, and we would really press the time. And I'm sure it would have been. I'd have, well, maybe we should have.
Okay,
but there wasn't a primary source.
Similar question.
But we did ask in terms of advertisements. I mean, in Tallahassee and Alachua County and Levy County, for anyone who knew anything about the Rosewood affair to come forth and talk with us about it. And we had some people to come forth, but we sent out, I mean, we tried to cover bases like that. We did not ask, did not deal with, you know, the governor's relatives per se, but we sent out advertisements.
So in the Levy County area, for example, you ran an ad in the newspaper
in the Levy.
What did that ad say?
In the Levy County Journal, I could provide you with a copy of the ad at another. I don't have it today. It just basically said anyone having knowledge of the incidents which occurred in Rosewood, Florida in 1923, please contact, and then had our numbers. And so
who was the investigator that was? That was one of you in charge of that went down and did those interviews.
Interviews all over. Right. Every member of the team conducted several interviews.
What was your response rate in Levy County in terms of numbers of persons you contacted and spoke with? Where are those records kept?
We contacted, I would say, over 15 people. Many of those individuals. Well, and I'm talking now about the white community.
Anyone at all in Levy that was...
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And they, many of them refused to go on record.
All right.
So that just really wasn't helpful to us. that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Well, why did they say they wouldn't go on
yeah.
record?
I think it's one of the problems that we had going back after 10 years. One of the disadvantages that we had was that it had been somewhat trampled over by various members of the news media, and that made it very difficult for us to explain to people what we were doing and who we were, and that we were indeed conducting an official investigation on behalf of the state. I later secured to assist me in that a letter from Representative Lawson's office identifying me, but still I could not really get the cooperation of people because they felt like they had been so many times before misquoted or misrepresented in the press.
When we would try to get an interview, and we were successful sometimes and got some good interviews, but a lot of times they say, "Are you from the media?" That would be the first question they would ask, and we would say that we were not, and then sometimes they still wouldn't talk to us, but sometimes they would. But that would be the real reason.
Yeah.
And how many people refused to discuss this with you?
Four or five.
Didn't really keep account.
No,
but
several.
We knew the major families that were being involved from the paper reports, and we would try to either talk to their descendants or them.
But the primary reason, as you recollect, is that because of all the media coverage and the perception that they had been misquoted in the media, they would not now come forward and discuss this with you. That's your recollection of it.
Yes, but I would add that a lot of them didn't want to talk because they didn't want to bring back the past, that it was very painful to them and it was something that was past and they didn't wish to discuss it, even though they could have discussed it. They had knowledge of it, but it was just a very painful thing to them, and they were reluctant to talk to them.
I might add that I was with Professor Rogers on several of those trips when people did say they didn't want to speak, we respected their right to privacy in that regard. We did not press or anything.
I understand.
What is... Would it be your conclusion that there are in Levy County today living witnesses who, but for that apprehension, would have some personal knowledge to share of this?
Yes.
What number?
And this is in both the white and black community? Is that what you're telling me?
Certainly would know it about the white community. The black community. There may be some, but they have been extremely cooperative.
So your remarks this morning are basically directed toward the white community.
White community, right.
Okay.
Did any of those witnesses express to you any apprehension of fear of attack or assault by the other race if he was I say that because I've received calls saying
that. One gentleman felt, I don't think it's valid, but he felt that there would be possibly reprisals by the black families against him if they knew where he was.
I think I spoke with him, as a matter of fact, yesterday. Let me revisit the second generation inquiry, and I think I know the answer, but for the record, let me ask, what, if any, inquiry did you make of spouses or children of the sheriffs in Levy and Alachua to determine if they had any family records, any diaries, or any conversations with the sheriffs about what happened? If you did that, when did you speak with, and what was the result?
Well, the pertinent sheriff to have spoken with, or his descendants, the wife, would have been Sheriff Walker.
Yes, sir.
But we did not contact any members of his family.
Well, his son, his only son,
Well, my understanding is that he doesn't have a living heir, but I could be wrong in that. I have not really researched that.
Okay. The same question with regard to the Alachua sheriff who went down there. Did you make any inquiry with him?
That was something that Dr. Colburn attempted to do, I believe, and had no success.
Okay, is that effort recorded in the official records of the state?
No.
Right. Same question with regard to the state attorney DeCote's family or spouse or anything. Did you inquire of them?
We tried to find out as much as we could about his family, and again, I had no luck.
I did research his biography and where he attended school and his jobs and et cetera. I have those records if you'd like them. And then Dr. Colburn in Gainesville did a follow-up and was not successful.
So if any of these officials, the governor, the state attorney, the sheriff, have relatives alive in Ford today, we don't know what they would have to say about this.
Right.
If any of them have any family diaries or family Bibles, we don't know what they say.
No.
Right.
I would just add that is something that we are still looking into at this point on our own.
Your inquiry is still open-ended in that regard.
We're still doing research and still getting material because we worked on this. We had really 5 months. Lot more that we want to get.
This is still kind of working.
Right. We want to do a book on Rosalie.
All right. Appreciate that. What inquiry, if any, do you make of Francis Taylor's family concerning this event?
Well, we asked people that we interviewed. We heard rumors that Fanny Taylor was still alive. The last that was, I guess, seen or heard of her by one of the people that I interviewed and request that I not use their name, was in 1926 in Alachua County. And again, just rumors that she was still alive, but we could never really locate where she was.
How about her relatives?
Well, she still has relatives down in Levy County. But these people were not willing to.
And they bought some property. We got the deed record of that, and we checked the census figures to get, her status. We checked the marriage record to see that she was married.
So she does have family, huh?
And the Taylor family, yes, very definitely. And her children may well be alive.
Someone called me and represented that they were family of hers.
Dr. Rogers, we attempted to speak with the Taylor family.
And that was an example of what we were speaking a minute ago, where they were reluctant to speak to us.
Yep.
And so he's always to say, well, he just said, I just don't want to talk about it.
Yep. All right, I understand. Much of the report or newspaper article, what efforts, if any, were made to speak to the reporters that wrote these articles to determine which of this was based on personal knowledge or hearsay, third or fourth hand?
They had to see it too.
All of them.
I imagine.
Okay.
And some of them, some of the articles were written by the newspaper, but no name attached. I mean, there's no byline in terms of
anonymous piece.
Well, not really. I mean, the newspaper, I mean, it's identified as the newspaper in terms of the name of the newspaper.
And saying this is an AP report.
Sure.
Right.
But at this date, you weren't in a position to look behind what was printed and flesh out
the
basis of it. Again, a function of passage of time and lack of record. I take it that some of you had done some prior writings or had some prior knowledge of Rosewood before you bid for this contract. Did anyone have any
contact?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was in what context?
In 1992, I was working on my master's degree at Florida State University, and I decided to write my thesis topic on a history of Cedar Key, Florida. In the summer of 92, I was living in Cedar Key for the purposes of research for about 3 months. I first heard of Rosewood, Florida at that time. I completed my master's degree, really, I mean, my thesis, by the end of the summer, or by September of 92. I didn't graduate until December because I had to go through what's called thesis defense, and that you cannot do that over the summer because too many professors are gone at that period of time. But I had really completed the work by then. So in my master's degree thesis, there is 8 pages that deal with Rosewood, because I felt that Rosewood had some effect on the community of Cedar Key. And it's in there in that regard. It was misreported in the press at one time that I wrote a history of Rosewood. I did not. I wrote a history of Cedar Key, Florida. So I had some prior knowledge through that.
Anyone else have any prior insight into Rosewood?
I mean, I was aware of Rosewood.
But I mean,
just in general, we all are students of Florida history. And, of course, we had run into it, but I don't think any of us other than Tom had done any specific research on Rosewood, but we knew about it.
If that's the article wherein you concluded that Rosewood was a community, quote, in decline, end quote, in 1923?
And I believe that it's stated in there. I can't say for sure. And at that time, that was the only, we had journalistic journals, newspaper articles on Rosewood, but that was the only documented, footnoted reference to Rosewood. There are a couple few passages in other history books, a sentence or two. And through my research, though, since that time, I've changed my mind in a lot of those areas.
Right.
And I don't always have the same interpretation that I did at that point. We've learned a lot more since then. But at the time, I guess it was about all we had.
In light of your research, Rosewood, the recent year, do you have a different opinion as to whether that was a community in decline or not in 1923? And if so, what's the basis of the change of opinion?
I don't want to say it was in decline at that time. I would rather say that it had its heyday, or its high point, I believe, in the period maybe 1880 to 1890.
Yes.
That at that time it had a post office. At that time it had a county school maintained and paid by with a county teacher. At that time it had a hotel. At that time, it had a sawmill, and it was a very different community, and communities go through a history where they go through transitions and changes, and I would say that by 1920, it had changed from what it was in 1885.
Right. Is it accurate to conclude from your report and from the appendix that the Rosewood community, to a great extent, depended upon the sawmill and the surrounding timber or as a source of income and earning? Is that
in the
1880s?
Yeah.
You're talking about 23?
Yes, sir.
Well, in 23, there was the residents of Rosewood. There was some small, what you call patch farmers, that was not a plantation, just farm.
Yes.
And then there were a lot of trappers there. They lived by trapping because that's such a magnificent area, the swamp, the Gulf Hammond, and some worked over in Wiley, but the major paycheck for Sumner, Rosewood, Wiley was the Comer Cypress Lumber Company.
Up the road there.
And it's going to burn in 1927.
Yes.
And, of course, the Florida boom is going to go bust by 26.
Yes.
And Florida's going to, the whole state's going to have a depression before the Great Depression.
Yes.
And so Florida itself goes into a decline. So sometime within the next 2 years or so after 23, the whole business goes into
the whole
a decline.
Area.
And the railroad goes out and the mill burns. And so, yeah, you would say that. But not in 1923. Okay. I would say they were holding their own.
Do you recall what year the railroad pulled out of that area?
No.
Uh-huh. I have that exact date. Now,
in the 1920s?
No, later.
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 Do you recall what year the forest was depleted because of the sawmill knocking the trees down?
Late 20s.
Late 20s.
Well, it depends on
the 30s.
What product you're talking about. The cedar trees were gone.
Right. The other wood product in the area, when were they all wiped?
They're still doing it.
Okay. Is there a mill down there anymore?
Yes, in Levy County.
Where?
I'm not exactly sure, but they're still hauling logs out there every day. Anytime you go down there, you're trying to get out of the way of those big log trucks.
But not in the Rosewood area?
Oh, no.
You didn't have legal counsel as you did your team process in terms of here's our objective and here's the standard of proof and here's admissible evidence. That wasn't part of your project.
No, we operated under the way
historically.
And the reason I say that is in your appendix, you, in fact, this morning you made reference to depositions. But really, they're not. They're sworn statements that came from one of the counsel. Document records of ownership. In your endeavors to determine who owned what in Rosewood, you went to the clerk's office in Levy, looked at property records?
Yes, sir.
Did you accumulate those as some part of the research package that's not included in the indices here, and if not, why not?
Yes, sir. I have the property tax records here today. If you'd like to take them for 1922 and 1923, which would indicate land ownership. And many of the families here are clearly recorded.
All right.
They do not always, though, indicate this is land or property, that people would be leasing that property and that they might construct homes on it.
Yes.
With respect to deeds, it's very different. Dr. Rogers can talk about that. Many of the deeds were I think Dr. Rogers can explain why.
Well, a lot of times they didn't record deeds, so they waited 10 or 20 years after the purchase to record them. Very likely that there were black families there who owned property, but that the deed had not yet been recorded in the courthouse.
In either event,
well, some of them were.
You do have some research here that might be helpful, not
right
today certainly, but for the overall project of ascertaining property ownership and things
like
that.
I don't have copies of these, but I'll
now, just in terms of the process rolling at some later stage of this proceeding.
Let me just interrupt there for a moment. Is it possible we could get copies of that made since it's not part of the...
Sure. Whatever is convenient.
Wait. What you've got there are property deeds from Rosewood?
Yes, sir. These are property tax records.
And
who owned the property and how much they are playing a tax role.
Would you describe for me how you came to possess those? Did you return the property?
The records of the county tax records are on public records in the Levy County Courthouse at Bronson.
So these are official records
of
Levy County. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, there are copies of them here. Several years ago, all of the counties began microfilming these records and depositing them in the state archives, and you can find them there.
These are the official records.
Yes.
These aren't something that you can...
No.
Okay. No problem.
And incidentally, though we couldn't find some records that didn't exist, all the Levy County officials at the courthouse were extremely cooperative with us and helped us find things that we didn't know, and even suggested some things that were very, very fine.
I need to... we've got one thing we've got to do at 11 o'clock, and I think before we go any forward, are you all okay if we come back in maybe 10 minutes? Can we get you all where you need to be? I know I promised you to try and make this short, and it's not, but...
Blame State Council.
That's okay. As long as we're all right with your schedules, can we be back in about 10 minutes? Thank you. Exactly. Sure, I think I interrupted you in the middle of a question, but if you remember what it is, we can proceed.
Thank you. We were speaking about the property records, and it would be your observation that there are sufficient property records in Levy County to perhaps trace back these title claims with some degree of comfort.
Right, but also pointing out that some people own property, but there are no records for that.
Can I ask you one question about that? I don't know if you know it, but Mr. Dye is the property. We have had testimony from various families. The Goins, I think, are one of the bigger families there. Do these records reflect property owned by that family?
You will see the acreage owned by the Goins family in those records.
All right.
And in particular, it's beyond ownership. They leased thousands of acres. But that's why, you know, you operate a turpentine
business. So your academic research confirms the testimony of the various people that recall the property ownership. Okay.
Let me follow up on that. It's your testimony that your view of the property records and your recollection today is that each of the claimants own all the property they claim?
We don't know that. That's not what. No, I didn't mean. We didn't mean to imply that.
Thank you.
No.
My question is, though, that the records indicate that property was owned, and you can confirm that by your research. And this will describe the property, I'm sure. It's official records, right?
Yes, the records confirm that property was owned.
The deed records and the tax records.
Right, and what I'm gathering from your opinion, and Dr. Rivers, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there, in addition to this, your conclusion is that there was other property that cannot be confirmed through the records.
That's
that
correct.
Correct. Okay.
That's correct.
Yes.
One of the pieces of evidence, as it is in the report, is the McElvey interview.
McElvey.
In fact, we've had that tape here at the podium this morning. Under what circumstances, if you know, was that interview taken? By whom? For what purpose? When?
I'm not sure the exact date. I believe my estimate would be 84 to 85. That tape was a part of a project conducted by the Cedar Key Historical Society, what they call their oral history project. And at that time, they went through the Cedar Key and surrounding area, and they interviewed a number of the elderly individuals through Cedar Key. It's talking about all types of subjects, from how they made their living to the economic factors and simply family stories. And it was a part of that project.
Was not under oath?
No, it was not.
Did you make any attempt to contact that gentleman?
That gentleman is dead.
The road through Rosewood, that's the only road to the Key, is that correct?
That's correct. State Road 24.
I know there was references in the records to the cars driving back and forth there. That's one road town and in the middle of somewhere and somewhere.
But there were roads connecting Rosewood and Wiley and Sumner. So these roads, the cars, were going up and down these roads as well.
How far up the road is Wiley from Rosewood?
About a mile.
Walking
a
mile or two.
Eastward, mm-hmm. Yes. And so is Sumner walking this.
Did in your media search, did you encounter any reports of what I'll call, I don't mean to be faceless about it, but white flight folks, white citizens that were getting out of the area when the word of the armed black citizens spread? Did you encounter any of that?
No, I think it would be safe to assume that if whites in the area were frightened, they probably were careful or stayed indoors, but we didn't see any evidence that there was white flight, that people left there.
Going back to the records question, Mr. Dye, it has been attributed to you that you had some sawmill records, some board minutes, and some FRC reports of property.
I really don't know where that comes from. I've never stated to any person that I had sawmill records or those other records.
in terms of witness interviews, do any of you recall interviewing a Mr. Herbert Wilkerson concerning the events in the morning of the shootout at the Perry household?
Herbert Wilkerson, that's our man.
Yeah, well,
and if so, why is his version not included in your report?
Mr. Wilkerson only decided to come forward recently when a Florida Public Television special on Rosewood aired, and he felt that his family had been misrepresented in that portrayal of Polly Wilkerson.
That's what he relayed to me as well.
Then he decided to come forward and speak. That was not during the time when I was employed to do this investigation. It came only after. In fact, it came just a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, I wasn't worth the time interval. You did interview him?
I did.
Did not his portrayal to you put a perhaps different gloss on the events at the Carrier household that morning?
I was wondering if I could address a question to the special master before I answer that question. I'm wondering if I should give evidence, or I don't have the benefit of legal counsel, of evidence that I have collected since I am no longer been employed by the state, and am I required to give evidence that I did not collect as a part of this study when I was employed in doing that?
You certainly, if you have any doubts about the ramifications of your testimony, you would be entitled to consult with counsel before you gave it. And I don't want to, you know, we're not following rules of evidence in the same format that we would if we were in court, obviously. I mean, this is a different kind of proceeding. But if you have any concerns about that, I'm not going to force you to testify as to that today. If you feel like you can't, you don't have to.
The only point.
Talk to counsel.
The only point I wanted to make is I made the trip to talk to him at my own expense, not the state's expense, and the time and trouble.
I'm not aware of anything pertaining to the rules of evidence that would preclude your testimony under those circumstances. But like I said, I'm not in a position today to coerce the testimony if you feel uncomfortable giving it and want to talk to counsel.
Well, as that testimony was not a part of the official report, and I did not have the benefit of talking with my colleagues about that testimony and really doing the background historical work into it, I would really prefer not to comment on it. I certainly do not want to be in any way perceived as being uncooperative or in any way saying that I'm not willing to help wherever I can.
For some reason, Mr. Peters seeks to compel your testimony in that regard. There are procedures he can undertake to do so. If you decline to do that today, I'm not going to coerce the testimony.
Okay.
So,
then I would.
We have Mr. Wilkerson available at some point if you want him. I mean, we have legislative subpoena power, and if we need to get into this matter further, we'll resolve that then.
My interview with Mr. Wilkerson was one of the reasons why I requested 7-day continuous hearings to go down there and speak with him and some other witnesses who said they were not interviewed by the team.
Okay.
And that's
okay, and it's the subject of the motion we discussed this morning, but let's move on to something that the team will testify about.
Did you at any time in your inquiry of what new records we now know there are find any evidence of any reason why Governor Hardee should have disbelieved the statement which we now know was made by the Alachua sheriff, perhaps erroneously, but was made?
Not the election of sheriff. I don't think we have any evidence on that. It's the Levy County.
All right. With regard to the Levy sheriff, do we have any evidence in the record to indicate why the governor should have disbelieved that sheriff's opinion that things are under control? And if so, would you point it out to me?
Well, I think that the governor should have disbelieved that because used in terms of maybe a quicker follow-up that things could possibly get out of hand.
Okay. Okay. Now, specific piece of evidence, my question would request, you have materials of record to show that the Levy sheriff was a racist, was incompetent, was deceitful, was someone not to be believed, and if so, where in the record is that?
We have no record as to the character, whether he was racist or not racist.
Right.
So we have no evidence on that.
You would have no reason today to disbelieve that sheriff if he were to give you the same report he gave the governor. Things are under control, governor. Is that right?
Well, today I certainly would.
Well, I understand that in terms of hindsight, but...
But no, not even in terms of hindsight. Today, this incident occurred. We knew from the newspaper, knew from the media, that it had been going on for 5 or 6 days, and the inquiry was not made until Friday.
All right.
Then we need to suspect.
Yeah, but in terms of record evidence, you just have a suspicion.
Right.
All right. The same question with regard to the Alachua sheriff. Does not the record reflect that the Alachua sheriff went to Rosewood with, what, 4 or 5 squad cars of deputies?
Deputies and that they called armed citizens.
Yes.
They went there on Friday and did not remain overnight. They left.
Do we know what type of inquiry they made in
no.
Rosewood?
No, we don't.
Do we have any reason to critique it as being inadequate, unprofessional? I mean, we know it was wrong now, but in terms of what they did and why it was wrong, we don't know.
We don't know what they did when they got to try to prevent more violence,
right,
or anything else. We don't know. We just know that they came and remained there through part of Friday and then returned to Alachua County.
And in fact, they returned the same day that the Levy sheriff advised the governor that we think things are under control. Isn't that correct?
He advised the governor that things were under control, but also that very same day, which is very incongruous, the same day he advised the newspaper that it was a very bad situation.
That's what we say the media says, anyway.
That's right.
Whether it really happened, we don't know, but that's what the media says.
Right.
Do you have any knowledge of any communications which may have been made by the governor to the Alachua sheriff to confirm that which the Levy sheriff had told him?
No, because he explained that the governor's records were just...
You just don't know, do we?
There's nothing left.
You just don't know. With reference to the elected white officials that you're reporting, has been construed to find fault with, who are we talking about? It's at the bottom of page 87. Who are those elected white officials that you take exception with, and what is the record basis for that? And I respectfully ask for specifics in the record as to why you can reach that conclusion.
Well, we know that a community was destroyed. We know that homes were burned. We know that people lost their lives.
Yes, ma'am, I understand. Anything else? Okay. Which elected white officials is your criticism directed to?
Well, I guess the sheriff was the one immediately.
Yeah, sure. Maybe I can kind of recap it a little bit. The role of Governor Hardy and the Levy County Sheriff Walker in this affair remained somewhat clouded. No doubt about that. But despite 24 lynchings during his governorship from 1921 to 1925 and the race riot in Perry in December, Hardy never condemned racial violence in the state in any of the newspaper reports that we went through or the newspaper reports in that file at the archives. Really, until after Rosewood, when the Northern Press condemned the destruction of Rosewood.
Are you reading something now?
My own notes. And the failure of state leaders to protect these innocent black residents. Sheriff Walker told the press that further in trouble in Rosewood, quote, appeared imminent. That was on Friday. But then he declined assistance from the governor. And like other residents of the area, Walker would have been well aware that large bands of armed whites who were armed and roaming through Levy County in search of blacks involved in the Rosewood violence. So That's what we do know.
Okay. Anything else? So the elected white officials you're referring to are the Levy County Sheriff and the greater or lesser expense of Florida Governor. Anybody else? I have some more. Right. I just wanted to clear that matter up. What I'd like to do is walk through the report with you. I've got some areas here I'd like to inquire of. And if you could use your official record of press clippings, because what I would like to do is ask you about a conclusion in here, and then ask you where in the record is the basis for that. And I apologize for the detail, but that's what trial lawyers do.
We don't have our copies I asked
that you would bring them.
I didn't get the facts until yesterday. I mean, it wasn't.
It would be helpful for respondents, state of Florida, if you would bring the official research files with you. The hearing, for the record of the hearing, can be supplemented as circumstances require. I don't mean to be abrupt or curt with you, but that's how I'm trained to do things as a lawyer, and it's got to be that way if this forum is going to have any legitimacy.
Let me understand the point of what we're going to embark on now.
Yes.
You're going to go through various conclusions.
Yes.
And question the members of the team as to the basis in their research for that conclusion.
Yes.
Is that what we're planning on doing?
Many of them are referenced with a newspaper article, which I would submit on occasion doesn't support the conclusion. Many of them are just conclusions, but there's no way of knowing where the conclusion came from.
But you don't have all of the newspaper articles that we looked at.
Excuse me, Dr. Jones. What I'm trying to get at is the most efficient way to accomplish what you want to do.
I appreciate that.
And if from what I understand, the team is not prepared at this point or at this juncture to give you line and page numbers to everything from their research, which is more comprehensive. And you're entitled to.
That's why I'm trying.
Mr. Peters is a fine trial lawyer. If that's where we're going to be, I'm not quite sure we should begin this process when the team apparently feels uncomfortable with where we're going to be going, since they don't have all the materials here, and obviously this is more comprehensive than I thought we were going to do. So
I apologize.
Well, we could. If you want to try it, we can. I think I've practically memorized the report. I think we all do. If you want to try it,
the purpose of this is to help us, is to help Mr. Kearns and myself understand those things upon which we can rely in your report for making our own findings of fact. And this could be very important as to the relevant portions of the report. The report goes into a lot of history things that are not exactly. Let's begin the process and see how far we can go. And Dr. Rogers says maybe we can move it more effectively than I think we can. But we'll go and see what we can do. Let's go ahead. I'll have to follow with you. So let me have Exhibit 1. Okay.
We can start at the beginning. The chronology of events. Page 3, January 1, 1923. The quote of the chronology is, quote, late afternoon. A posse of white vigilantes apprehend and kill a black man named Sam Carter, quote unquote. Now, the purpose of my question, I'm frankly confused by it in the report. To a lawyer, a posse has a definition, and I would submit that a posse generally defined is a group of citizens who have been commissioned or put under oath by a sheriff to perform lawfully as, for the time being, law enforcement personnel. And then we have a sheriff, we have a deputy, we have posses, we have citizens, and we might have mobs and vigilantes, but they're different things. And frankly, I'm mystified as I read even the media account in your report. I don't see that those very significant definitional distinctions are maintained in the report. And for purposes of my defending my client, the state, the sheriff, I've got to know, how do we know if that was a posse or maybe just a bunch of mad white people? Because if you say it's a posse, then we got to know they were a posse, that they were there acting under color of state law. If we don't know that, then this word is misused. Starting with that, would you show me where in the record there's a basis for the conclusion that, quote, a posse of white vigilantes apprehend and kill Sam Carter? And I say that with respect to Mr. Carter, but I also say it, appreciate my purpose, I don't want to have law enforcement unfairly maligned if it ain't true. I just want that proof to be here forever, or let's walk away from it.
Can I comment on that briefly? I understand what you're saying, and certainly you all can appreciate that we are not attorneys. And I understand that these words have very specific legal meaning.
Absolutely.
But historians are not trained in law school, and we don't know what those meanings are.
The point you... Don't worry about the word policy. That's not what we're interested in. What we're interested in is the words under the color of state law. Now, is there anything in the record that indicates whoever apprehended and killed Sam Carter acted under color of state law?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. It continues. The summary on January 4, 1923, says, and I quote, late evening, white vigilantes attacked the Carrier household. Quote, end quote. I would offer you, in fact, I may have an extra set of the media clip summarizing that event. And with all due respect, I see white citizens. I see posse. I don't see vigilantes. Would you show me where in the record there is a basis for the conclusion that white vigilantes attacked? Might want to give one for them.
Well, tell me where this is coming from. These clippings are these.
I would represent that these are clippings which came from the appendices to the report.
Would you show it to Dr. Jones?
Yes. And again, if you have your official record, you can use your own to find the basis for those words.
If you all would take a minute and look at those and see if those are newspaper reports of the incident that you all have reviewed on prior occasions and used as part of your appendix.
Well, newspapers, contemporary newspapers, use some of them for...
Dr. Rogers, right now all I'm interested in is identifying what this is. So if you all could take a few minutes...
Yes, we have reviewed these before.
And these are part of what you reviewed in compiling your report.
Okay. They do not represent the entire collection of newspaper reports, however.
It's a selection, and is it my understanding it's contained in the appendix that we
no.
have?
That's, no, it's either contained in the not. Appendix or it's documents which I got from you, I think. Yes.
That's correct.
My question is, do I need to take it as another exhibit?
Yes.
All right, then let's mark it.
Again, I don't mean to be difficult, but
no, that's
what
fine.
I have
no.
to do here.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
But Mr. Kearns, I'm pointing out something to me as he just leads through this, that the word posse is being used in headlines in the newspaper.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand.
All right.
Good. And the question is, what reference in the record speaks to the word posse of white vigilantes in the context of killing the black man named Sam Carter? That's the first question. And then the second question is, what reason do we have to know if that was a shorthand used by media not knowing better, or if in fact these were maverick law enforcement folks that were out doing damage? Two questions, and answer them any way you can.
I'll give them one at a time.
First question. What record reference supports the notion that, quote, I'm sorry, I'm on the white vigilantes question. White vigilantes attack Carrier households. Where does the media say that? in your record?
Well, again, as I said, they used the various newspapers and the reporters and the citations that we used. They would sometimes call armed citizens, or they would call them mobs, or they would call them posses, or they would call them vigilantes. All of those words were used almost as synonyms. And sometimes, I guess technically, in the case of Mr. Carter, what was a posse, a legally constituted posse, once they got the land, then they degenerated or became a mob.
We don't know that, though.
No, but I'm saying that the use of those words have that possibility of happening.
Possibility. But we don't know, do we?
No.
Let me understand. There was never, from the official records or anything you all discovered, an indication that Sheriff Walker had put together citizens and deputized them into a posse. Is that correct?
That's correct, that we didn't have a record, and I would think that it would be an educated guess to say that he did probably assemble a posse, and that there was a posse here and a mob here and all men there.
Do we know how many deputies Sheriff Walker had?
No.
Well, we do know that after the, I guess I shouldn't use the text.
It's fine to say, I don't know.
I don't want to say.
Don't feel like my question requires an
no,
answer.
No. We know that after the, and I don't know if I should use the term attack or alleged attack or if I'm an attorney or what I'm supposed to be saying, but after the attack on Miss Taylor, that a group of men assembled and that they procured tracking dogs and that then they waited for Mr. Taylor to come and assist them, for Sheriff Walker, I'm sorry, to attend and assist them at that point.
Okay.
On that, so that was on Monday.
After Mrs. Taylor made her allegations, then the group formed, and we have records, the group formed of armed citizens who were all white. Is that correct?
Well, we do not have
records. We have recording in newspaper articles.
Correct.
That say this is what happened. And then Sheriff Walker joined that group. Is that what your best research has indicated?
That is correct, but we do not know and actually don't think that Sheriff Walker was present at the subsequent murder of Sam Carter.
So there's no indication that Sheriff Walker was among those who apprehended and later killed Sam Carter. Is that where we're at?
Right.
Okay, and now we're into the late evening at the Carrier household.
Okay.
Okay. Now tell me who was present from what your review of this was, from newspaper articles. Is that basically where we're getting this? There's I think there might be some interviews that you all did also at this point.
These are more armed men.
These are more armed men, and we know, is it Polly?
Polly
Wilkerson.
Henry Andrews.
And those were the two white men who were killed at the Carrier household, and that's documented.
And I can.
That's documented through newspaper articles and eyewitness testimony. And that's so far we're with you. Now, at the Carrier household, Sarah Carrier was killed, and that's documented by newspaper articles and by eyewitness accounts. Is that correct?
Correct.
Sylvester Carrier is killed, and that's documented by newspaper articles and eyewitness. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, although there's a reservation there that members of the family, a number of them, do not believe that Sylvester Carrier was killed,
and
that he escaped and lived later. But the contemporary reports at the time did say that it was Sylvester Carrier and Sarah.
Well,
he's
just
wrong.
The testimony I have heard and that Mr. Kearns has heard from eyewitnesses is that Sylvester Carrier, who was the uncle of the eyewitness, was killed at the Carrier house on that date. And you have nothing to contradict that statement.
No.
Is that correct?
Other than interviews with certain family members.
The,
the record would reflect that the claimants themselves received Christmas cards from Sylvester Carey in Texas, and he died in 1960-something.
But there's no evidence to support that.
We have no evidence
to support that.
We'll consider that later, but I'm asking the team as to what they reviewed and what they saw in the 4 or 5 months they were able to conduct this research. They don't have anything. You didn't see Christmas cards from Uncle
No, no. As far as we know, Sylvester Carey was killed. Glad that she got served tonight.
And the persons responsible for the deaths of Sarah Carrier and Sylvester Carrier were members of this armed citizen group.
Right.
And Sheriff Walker, to the best of your knowledge, was not present.
We're not saying that Walker was
there. No, we're not saying
that
Walker was there.
No, I said that.
No, Sheriff right.
Walker
not
was
present.
Not there, right.
And Mr. Peters is shaking his head on that statement, so I guess he has a question in that regard.
Respectfully, that's the problem, and it's a fundamental problem this report as it is, and that we don't have fixed use of terminology. We have a way of reconciling differences in media descriptions within the media, and I would submit there is at least one witness out there today that I spoke with yesterday that says to me on the phone, that ain't the way it is. And what I'm trying to do...
I'm reciting to you what has been presented
yes,
to us at the hearing.
I understand.
And if that's the folks that are talking to us from the team are saying that what I have recited is, in their estimation, correct. Now, you're free now to ask some questions as to upon which they base that conclusion and why it is not correct.
With reference to the January 4 late evening description, quote, white vigilantes attacked the Carrier house, quote, end quote. I direct your attention, for example, to page 40 of your own report, where you describe the activities of Henry Andrews and Polly Wilkinson. You don't use the word vigilantes on page 40 when you describe in more detail that event. Is that correct? You don't.
I don't know. I don't know. Say we don't. Okay, we
don't. What newspaper accounting do you have in the official record? This, from your appendix, uses the word vigilantes to describe what these two now deceased gentlemen are. Please.
I think we simply use the term vigilantes to describe people who are unlawful and that they assembled themselves together and are acting under their own purview.
And this was not a posse raised by the sheriff to go check out the Sarah Carrier's house. These were extra-legal maneuvers, and the word vigilante, to me, is perfectly legitimate.
Is not vigilante a pejorative term?
Yes.
All right. Do not you, Mr. Dye, today know of someone that you have interviewed that was a relative among that group that would suggest that majority term isn't fairly attributed to these two gentlemen?
I don't really understand the question exactly.
I think he's asking you if your interview with Herbert Wilkerson would suggest to you that his grandfather or whoever, Mr. Wilkinson, really was not acting as a vigilante. And I don't think you want to talk about the interview you conducted with Herbert Wilkerson. I think that's where we're at.
And that's where we're at.
That's where we're at. So he's not going to answer it. But I take it that when and if we hear from Mr. Herbert Wilkerson, he's going to say that his grandfather was not a vigilante. But if we don't, that's not part
and
of
it. And the only reason why I don't want to comment on that again is I haven't, usually if I collect a piece of evidence, I bring it back to the team. Mm-hmm. They are scholars and they have better training than I do. They are more experienced than I am. And I have the opportunity to then look at that material with them.
Whatever his interview with you
first of all, under the strict rules of evidence, right, would not be admissible. Second, he's the best source of it, and if we need to try, right, and get him here, we'll try.
And third, I don't think I'd be fair to my colleagues to do that.
Your research was not as an investigative for us, so I'm comfortable. Let's move on.
So for purposes of that question, you do not have a newspaper report which attributes the word vigilante to these gentlemen that went to Carrier Household?
We may very well have one. We've got so many newspapers that it's entirely possible that we do. I don't know.
That's where respectfully this process is going to break down, because I had the right to demand that proof that this report to be accepted by the legislature.
I think the members of the legislature are going to ask Mr. Kearns and I to make sure we have exhausted whatever reports are available, whether they be newspaper or interview or otherwise. But I'm trying to use our time today as best we can, and we'll continue to try and get to the bottom of that. But I think for my purposes, it is true that Mr. Henry Adams and Mr. Wilkerson, C.P. Wilkerson, went to the Carrier House. Is that?
Amen.
And it is also true they were not deputies of Levy County Sheriff's Office.
Correct.
Amen.
Okay. Now,
and it's also true that they were not invited.
Well, let me not get ahead of myself. I've got to understand what you all are agreeing to with what Mr. Peters has asked you. Now, I think I'm up to that point. They're there. The question now that you have is what?
Upon what record basis do you support your conclusion that, quote, they were not invited?
Well, as far as we can infer and see from the...
No, but what record basis?
The people gathered there in the house there for their own security is the suggestion of Sylvester. And it's strange credulity to think that people who were there for their safety would invite white people to come in.
What if there was a living witness in Levy County today that could testify under oath in cross-examination that he and another white gentleman were asked to come to the Carrier Household that morning because they were trusted? That they had in their custody a black prisoner, and that there were to be arrangements made to hand over the suspect to them to put in safekeeping, because there was the trust between the carriers and these two gentlemen that were killed. What if that person was here to testify? Would that change your conclusion?
Well, it would be new evidence and new material, and certainly it would be important.
Does that sound like something that this witness might have told you the other day?
Yeah, we're not getting into that. I mean, he doesn't want to comment on it. I'm not going to make him do it today, so.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be abrupt with you, but that's proof I would say the state's entitled to if these allegations are going to be determined by the legislature to be true.
Are we back on the chronology now?
Yeah, I'm going to skip over some, but you get the idea of what I'm at, and it'd be a long weekend here at the current rate. Let's go to January 5, 1923. Approximately 200 to 300 whites from surrounding areas begin to converge on Rosewood. And I accept the representation that the media attributes that number to the whites that were converging. What record basis do you have today that you can show us to tell us which or what part of that 300 whites are persons that were there as deputy sheriffs or as lawfully sworn posses whose intent and purpose was to keep the peace as opposed to the mobs that the report says there? What record basis is there for us to reach that conclusion?
I guess there are none. The only thing that we can say is that they didn't keep the peace.
There are some newspaper reports. Again, I know maybe that's not a necessary legal requirement, but the Gainesville Sun, for instance, would later editorialize. They would say that they would describe these people, and they said that we are told that bootleg liquor was at the bottom of that, and what a shame. What occurred at the death house was inevitable. And so they sort of describe these people as being out of control and a mob.
Is that the best evidence you have as to the composition of 300 whites that went to Rosewood? Is that editorial look at? Is that all there is?
Another newspaper article.
Again, with due respect, I can't accomplish my purpose unless the witnesses, fortunate as they are, show me the record. And that just won't suffice.
Well, if we had known, I guess we would have photocopied everything, but this isn't how we do our research. Our method is...
Excuse me one second. Here's what we're going to do. I'm not going to have the team feel as if they're not prepared to answer your response.
And I don't want you to.
And I think there's a better way to achieve this. First of all, Mr. Peters, I can tell by all the yellow tabs he has on the report, can identify for you the particular places that he's got questions. And I think it would be fairly, it may not be fairly simple, but I think it would be easy for him to identify what he wants, as Mr. Kern says, more orderly, to give you those particular pages and paragraph numbers that he's looking for, and then let you respond to them, because obviously you all, I can tell just by your comments this morning, are ultimately familiar with this material, and I don't think it was going to be an imposition on you, since you've compiled the report, to reference where he's asking from and where it came from. And I don't think it's the best use of our time today, especially since we have a witness that has been tolerant of being with us for three consecutive days, to do this. And I think what I'm going to suggest and ask you all to do for me is go ahead, and I think we can copy Mr. Hanlon with what your so he can look at it too. And then just get back to us. I mean,
can we just give a written response to?
I would much rather take it as a written and let Mr. Peters and Mr. Hanlon look at it, and then as to any questions, because we have all the records, and if not, you can supply them to us, and Mr. Kearns and I will look at them. And if the statement is used that the Gainesville Sun said this was bootleg liquor and vigilantes, that's where it came from.
I respect that conclusion.
So what we're going to do on that, and to save everybody a lot of time this morning, is that if there's any more questions, you all have been more than cooperative with us, and I appreciate that.
I think
and we will respond.
I am so far, though, because you know the legal test you must meet and the comments on this point.
You're going to give the questions to us.
Yes, I'll give you what I'm told. Written in writing.
Do it in writing.
I don't want you all, you all are not attorneys. I don't want you to be. You please do not be attorneys. I just want you to just put out in the record where you think your conclusion is the source of it. That's it. And don't worry about whether it's admissible or if you're using a term that has legal connotations. That's not your job, and I don't want it to be your job, okay? So I think we can probably dispense with the team for the time being. And that would be my proposal, is to go ahead and compile this and let them respond to it, because I don't see any point to continue the discussions at this level. Now, is there anything else we have that would be worthwhile while we are consuming the time of four scholars?
A follow-up level of inquiry would be when we reach a point where we find conflicting media accounts, i.e. posse, deputies, mob, how did you among the team resolve to use one word and not the other? And that'll be a follow-up interrogatory for these other matters, I guess.
And we can answer that.
Okay, if you can do.
Well, I mean, just by the very number of times that it appears in the number of newspapers, they would say mob or armed men, or if there was a definite delineation with the word posse, then that was the way that determined our usage of the word.
Well, if we got five mobs and one posse, they were mob.
what we got.
Right. So the newspapers were very, very imprecise in how they categorized a group of armed men searching for blacks. And we used it as it appeared in the contemporary newspaper, and not with a very narrow definition of the difference between vigilante and desperado or whatever.
And we now know at least one graphic example where this big old picture wasn't right, huh?
We don't really know that.
All right, if the claim is to be believed, perhaps it's not right. You still have your doubts about that figure.
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to belabor the point.
We're not really getting anywhere on this. I understand, and they've testified this morning that they did as much of a search as was reasonably possible.
I understand that.
And the only thing that they had available to them upon which to make some findings, which were done in the same manner, as I understand it, that historians use in all other contexts, is to review those things that were available to them. And that's what we've got. And we can't go back 71 years and reconstruct this. We've got what we've got, and we're going to deal with it. But I do think, for purposes of satisfying the state's inquiry, it would be very helpful to go ahead with the process we just described, and I would ask you all to help me on that. You had raised your finger, Mr. Hanlon. Is there something else?
I just have a few questions. I don't know if you have more than
me. Okay, but this isn't going to be another run through paragraph by paragraph, right?
Very good.
All right.
Okay. I just want to clarify. I think I've got some things to clarify. Do you have your report, Freddie?
No.
On page 27 of the report, you discuss Fanny Taylor's version of the assault.
Mm-hmm.
And he states Tunapati, under the direction of Levy County Sheriff Robert Elias Walker, popularly known as Bob, was formed to search for the unidentified felon. And in skipping over to the next page, on page 28, you say, although the lawman headed a deputized posse, the search was soon joined by numerous other men who converged from several locales. And by Tuesday night, a crowd estimated at between 400 and 500 people combed the woods. It was logistically difficult, if not impossible, for all of them to be sworn as deputies. Many of the men were, in fact, independent agents who formed their own search parties and pursued their own extra-legal objectives. And then there's a reference there in footnote 28 to the Jacksonville Times Union of January 3, 1923 and the Tampa Morning Tribune of January 3, 1923. Is that where you were getting your information about those distinctions there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mr. Peters asked you to try and use your best efforts to describe what Sheriff Walker knew at the time that he advised the governor that he didn't fear any further disorder. That was on January 5th of 1923, which would be which day of the week?
Friday.
And he asked you about, do you have any record evidence that that maybe that wasn't accurate? Now, I think he asked you to speculate maybe whether or not Sheriff Walker was a racist or something like that. But I'd like you to reflect for me what it appears to you from all of the evidence you've reviewed would have been apparent to Sheriff Walker on Friday, January 5, 1923, when he apparently, from all we can tell from the newspaper articles, reported one thing to the governor and apparently something to, a different story to somebody else. What facts were known to him then?
Well, he must have known, I would say, that he knew everything that had happened up to that time. He knew about,
let's describe that for a moment.
Well, he knew that Mr. Carter had been killed. He knew that
sorry, the first thing you knew.
He knew about the assault on Ms. Taylor.
He knew that in that community, it's a pretty small community, right?
Right.
A white woman had accused a black man of entering the sanctity of her home and assaulting her. Is that right?
Correct.
He knew that a puppy had been, that some people had been deputized, and the paragraph I just read to you. He knew that Sam Carter had been killed. He, in fact, had gotten Aaron Carrier away from that mob, so put him in jail, I think. So
for safety.
Right.
He knew that there were 200 or 300 whites in the area.
Hmm? That's right.
And
and he knew by that time that a portion of the town had been destroyed.
He knew about
destroyed?
Thursday night shootout.
He knew that
people were killed.
Holly Wilkerson, who I believe was what's called a quarters boss.
That's right.
Yeah. That he and Mr. Andrews had been up to the Carrier house and killed Sarah Carrier, for sure, and apparently Sylvester Carrier, at least they thought so, and that the Carrier house had been torched.
That's right.
And he knew that women and children were fleeing through the woods. In fact, there's evidence that people in the white community in Sumner very courageously helped women and children escape. I don't think there's any evidence of anybody helping any black man escape. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And we know that all of this material was being reported in the press on the AP wire and being reviewed by the governor's press secretary. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And by the governor.
And by the governor. All right. Now, is it fair to say that that is record evidence, in your opinion, that Sheriff Walker might have had reason to believe that his statement to the governor, no problem, we got him under control, no further disorder, does that, in your mind, call into question the credibility of that statement? Yes?
Yes.
Well, tell me, what was the history in the South or in Florida right then when this kind of thing went on in this kind of community?
When alleged rape of a white woman by a black man, the white citizens would rise up in arms and try to deal with it in many situations in a vigilante way.
In fact, in Ocoee in 1920, it wasn't even the traditional allegation of a black man assaulting a white woman. It was voting. And town was just burned instantaneously like that, wasn't it? All right. And that was known in the press back then, too, wasn't it?
Right.
So, can you think of any basis whatsoever that Sheriff Walker would have to conclude under those sort of facts that there was no reason to suspect that that town might be burned and people in it harmed? Is there anything that you can think of as you sit there today?
Well, he might think that the sheriff from Appalachia County would be there to reinforce, except that he went back that day. So that's a negative
thing. All right. Let me ask you this about trying to get this in some historical context. I've reviewed the report you did on racial violence in the 1920s. That section, I think it begins at page
19. Is it, Dr. Jones, let me, if you're the right one, I'll direct these questions to you. Is it fair to say from what you know of racial violence in the 1920s in Florida that Ocoee is about the closest thing we get to Rosewood?
Ocoee and maybe Perry.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Ocoee and Perry for a moment. In Ocoee, voting day and Democrats and Republicans in time-honored fashion are after each other again, and the Republicans are trying to register blacks, right? Is that right?
Well, yes.
Okay. And there's a real dispute that comes when a black tries to vote, question about whether he had a gun, etc. One thing leads to another, and there's a killing of a black man, and that town is burned to the ground. And it occurs roughly from the close of the polls in the afternoon until about 3 or 4 in the morning, and it's all bang, right?
Right.
Okay. Certainly, in fairness to the officials in Ocoee or the governor, no evidence whatsoever in Ocoee that there was time to act to prevent what occurred.
That's right.
I'd like to object to this line of questioning to the extent that it assumes fact matters not in evidence.
Oh, well, let me see. That's a good point.
Let me make some rulings here. If we're going to get
technical.
First of all, I accept Dr. Jones as a historian. Research, and you're prepared to be questioned on them. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why are you shaking your head?
I will.
Well, this gets into an issue, and it's enough for Mr. Kearns and I to digest Rosewood. We're not here today on Ocoee or Perry. I mean, and the members may have some concern about the precedent that they would establish with Rosewood, but I don't need to have this right now, and I understand that might be something important for the members to consider, but I know what you're trying to do, I think.
It comes as somewhat of a surprise to me. I thought that it was pertinent, but if...
Well, how much do you want me to report on? Do you want me to report on Ocoee? I mean, we don't have anybody here from Ocoee. We don't have anybody as a claimant from Perry. I mean, the members will be able to know that there are other incidents. Mr. Whoever might be here from the state may come back and say that there's no liability. You may say there's no liability, but Mr. Lawson, Mr. DeGrande have not filed on Ocoee. They've not filed on Perry. I mean...
Well, I understand your position.
If I'm going to get anything out this year, I am going to have to limit myself.
Okay.
And I don't want to go on the record about bringing people in from Ocoee and Perry or lynchings from other places
mm-hmm.
that members may ask you about. And I may have to say I didn't do any report on Ocoee. Mr. Kearns didn't do any report on Ocoee.
All right.
But, yes, sir, Dr.
But that's just, again, we're not lawyers, but as historians, that's how we work. We try to put it in a perspective. We try to deal with the overall atmosphere that led up to the Rosewood incident. And to give it a perspective.
I understand.
So that's why...
I understand, but as you said this morning, you had 4.5 months to do this. Mr. Kearns and I don't have 4.5 weeks to do this. And if I allow this to proceed in this manner, and Mr. Peters raises objections about it, they're well-founded at this point. And all I'm going to say to you is that I accept what Dr. Jones, who I believe did this part of the report, if not Dr. Jones, whoever did this part of the report, did as a historian. But I don't want and I don't intend on making a report on what happened at Ocoee and whether or not the state officials there had time or did not have time to respond to protecting the citizens who were assaulted or killed or burned or whatever at that place. I just can't do it. And we don't have a bill on it, so I'm not required to do it. Okay?
You were absolutely correct. My only point in asking the questions was to attempt to establish established that.
And I'm very familiar that many of the members are going to have questions about what precedent we have. And I am prepared to say there may be incidents relating to other places that could, assuming they pass Rosewood, could have other people come forward and say, wait a second, we also have a legitimate claim if this is standard of review. But that's not here yet, and, you know, that's okay. We don't have to do
it. But the point of my objection is the notion that there is an assertion of fact in a conclusion here that would, without cross-examination or better documentation, differentiate whatever response time there was or was not in that city to this situation.
And
that was the reason for my objection.
I am sure that when you get in front of the committee will ask questions about the precedent. And you can say, at that point in time, what your distinctions are between Rosewood and any other particular thing. And you're free to say, we don't know. And I'm free to tell them that I didn't go into this because it was not part of House Bill 591, and I'm not going to. So I'm trying to move this along. Members are expecting me to have a report out soon, and I'd like to give them something that they can use in making their decision on this. So
I respect it.
Okay.
As long as Dr. Jones can be available for the members, because we have a historian here that has knowledge of the area, and I just won't go into it any further here, and we'll reserve for later on that.
Let me do this. I'm going to read everything. We're not in court when there's no gavel that's going to sound. If for some reason it becomes very apparent I need more information on this, these people have been more than cooperative, and they have undertaken a task which has served the state of Florida very well, and I don't intend on making their job any more difficult than it already has been. Okay. Can we move on? Is there anything else you want from Dr. Jones?
Just one moment.